Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome you back to another episode, the first episode post-quarantine.
I'm in-house, y'all.
And, I mean, if she ain't had the COVID yet, she damn sure about to get it.
Well, I think that I've had the COVID 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 times over, considering that most of the people around me have been infected. But I tested negative for the antibodies.
Sure. My name is Dan. You can keep up with me on Twitter and IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Be sure to check out my 7-part firearms series.
Really? Really? Are we promoting that now?
Yeah, why not? And you can keep up with the show on all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast.
Yes, and I am Just Dan, and you can follow me at I Tell Legal Lies on Twitter. Yeah, follow me. Mm-hmm. So, at your own risk. Yes.
Yeah, and then she won't check your
I do all the time.
Check
lies.
The DM.
That's,
none of that.
That's false. That is fake news, Donald Trump.
So, being that we've left the people
hanging.
Wait,
stop. Hold on a second. Let me tell you something. That whole being that shit that y'all say, y'all need to stop. That is not grammatically correct.
Being as?
Being that. I mean, that I mean, being why? As. No, I'm saying, why y'all do that?
Who is y'all?
You black people.
Being that.
Why have to be being?
Being as.
Why have to be? Why is it even being?
We like to throw a B in front of everything, like itch. Biatch.
Whatever.
Too short. So with everything going on, and we've left you hanging for a couple of weeks, and I apologize. You know, I tried to throw the show on my back and carry that bitch into the end zone, and I think I did a pretty good job, you know, Alvin Kamara style. Carried the whole team on my back.
Lies.
Got into the end zone. But a lot has happened over the past few weeks.
Ooh, Lord.
And where to start? So we all know about George Floyd. We all know about Breonna Taylor. We all know about Ahmaud Arbery.
Rashard Brooks.
Yep. Now, how off the top, how do you feel about that one? I'm torn.
All right. So, see, here's the shit that, I mean, for the sake of argument, if you say that it was justified, I'm going to say that it was not. So what's your thoughts?
Come on, answer the question. Answer the question.
What's your thoughts on this one?
I yield my time.
Okay. Anyway, all jokes aside, you said that you were torn. And quite like I've been of two minds on not many, but some subjects that we've touched on. This is another one that, not that I believe that what they did was justified, not at all, but, and please don't kill me, Twitter, Facebook,
police,
IG, anybody, but you are a gun owner. I don't know if you've ever shot at someone. I'm not asking.
Wouldn't admit to it if I had.
Not asking, but you as a gun owner and people who are familiar with guns and situations involving adrenaline know that split second decisions, right? So it literally takes 30 seconds to pull a trigger, if that.
Not even.
Right. So, I mean, you make a decision based on what you see or something you see. So that being said, fuck the police.
I agree with that sentiment. Fuck the police. I'm torn because of there's two sides to every story, but I actually witnessed two sides in watching this video. I witnessed what appeared to be a calm discussion between Rashard and the police officers, mm-hmm. which then escalated when they tried to take him into custody.
Right.
Now, should he have resisted? And of course, you know, that's what the white people like to say whenever we're shot and murdered. Shouldn't have resisted. In that case, no. But
he never should have been handcuffed. That I have said that to people throughout this. If this were a Caucasian gentleman.
Yeah, he get a ride home.
Right. They would have said, call somebody to come and take you. Or honestly, I know people who have been Caucasian people who have been stopped by the cops while at a red light, like driving up to a red light. Cops saw them swerving, pulled up behind them. They got out, spoke with them, and said, be careful. Asked them how close they were to home. Looked at their ID. I guess judged how far they had to go. Told them, I am letting you go with a warning. And then they proceeded on. And this is not something that I know via hearsay. This is something I know because I was in the back seat of this car. So I have seen it happen more than once. So had this been somebody white, this situation would have been entirely different.
Yeah, it would have unfolded differently. I've had the courtesy given to me back when I used to drink and used to drive. I've been pulled over twice while under the influence. And the first time it was pull over, park the car, and have somebody come and get you.
Right, or walk or whatever.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I got that courtesy. Shout to the Alexandria Police Department. And second time, I was underage. I was a juvenile, drinking and driving. Same situation, but this time it was call your parents or your mama to come pick you up and drive the car back. So both times I was extended that courtesy, and those were the two times that I got caught. Could they have afforded him the courtesy? Absolutely. And once we get to the tussle and he takes the taser, in my mind, I'm just like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? You didn't have to do all that.
But he was drunk.
He was drunk.
He blew like four times?
Yeah.
The limit?
Like 10 times. It was like 0.10. Yeah.
Was it? Okay. So he was drunk. He was not making rational decisions.
Absolutely.
And so in his head, though, I don't know what was going, but just looking at it and making assumptions, he probably said to himself,
they're going to kill me.
Right. So I'm trying to get away. And the only thing that I can do, he didn't go for the gun. He went for the taser because I think in the video, didn't they say something about tasing him?
They tried to tase him and right. It didn't
so
work.
So he was like, wait a minute. These people not going to tase me again. They're not taking me to jail. I'm just going to run away. And I'm taking this so that they won't chase me. And, you know, cops do running away. You have his car. You have his keys. You know who he is.
Not a violent criminal.
Right. Let him go. Because the charge that he pleaded to was what? Credit card fraud? What was it?
I don't know.
It was because he was on probation.
Yeah.
He was on probation.
That's another deterrent. Yeah.
Right. So, like, that actually played into it as well in my thinking. You know, finding out that he was actually on probation, you know, any little thing is going to send you back to do the time. So, but as I said, they already knew who he was.
And I guess he, in my eyes, what he did, was it wrong? Absolutely. But
it wasn't worth
his
life.
Death sentence? No. He right. took a non-lethal weapon. And then the dude is like running full speed. And in a flash, he turns around and he has the taser in his hand. But come on. Is he going to be able to accurately? And, you know, I know everything's happening
running,
split second.
Right,
because
you are running.
So was that worth his life? Absolutely not.
No.
So, but I am torn on how the events unfolded. But that takes us to defunding the police. And also I want to touch on qualified immunity. So defunding the police, I have to agree with all the talking heads, which is, it's branded poorly
right.
because when okay. people hear it, they Man. Hear, take all their money.
It is when they started the whole defund the police mantra. When the first time I heard it, I literally cringed. I was like, you just handed Donald Trump and the rest of his brain dead zombies this talking point, because you say, as you said, you say defund the police, and you immediately think, okay, take all their money. There will be no more police. So lawlessness is going to be the rule of the land. People are just going to be running around, able to do whatever the hell they want to do, yada, yada, yada. And that is exactly how Donald Trump and the rest of his cronies are selling this. They want to take police out of your neighborhood. They want to stop the police from doing their jobs. They. But that is not what is meant by defund the police. I mean, it's catchy, but it doesn't mean take all the police are superfluous. Like, get rid of them. That is not what defund the police means.
It's basically, from my understanding and my research, is it's shifting some of the funding that goes into the police department. For instance, New York. I was reading a statistic. New York's police department costs the city $6 billion per year.
Damn.
That's with a B.
That's a lot.
That is greater than their health care, their mental health services, their homeless program. It is more than many different programs and services combined.
And that within itself is messed up.
$6 billion.
That is messed up. And you just mentioned, though, one of the major points. You said mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know a lot of what police do is wrangling mentally disturbed individuals.
Yeah.
Like,
they're three most, and in that same statistic, their three most frequent calls are mentally ill people, mm-hmm. which they have no training, formal training. Correct. They domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the third one? Homelessness, domestic violence, and there was a third one too. But
you said mentally ill people.
Yeah.
So homeless, mentally ill, and domestic violence. And, you know, I said, I latched on to that mental illness when you said it, because here in Louisiana, our former governor.
Good old Governor Bobby Jindal, sir. Good old Governor Bobby Jindal.
That dumb bastard. That is, you know, that's the one thing we talk about. And we've talked about this before. When government needs to make cuts, the very first things that they cut is healthcare and education, which you would think would be a no-brainer to actually increase funding for these things. Like,
especially here after Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
Because I want to say it was what Kathleen Blanco was a governor during Katrina.
Right.
Then right after Katrina, Bobby Jindal gets elected.
Correct.
Cuts all of the state medical health care funding.
They closed down all the, well, not all, but about 90%.
They closed down all of the state run facilities.
Facility.
Right.
Well,
now,
I know
we
that
have
they
private
have
private facilities.
Okay. So all the state run mental health facilities were closed. There are some, but it's hard as shit to even get somebody to see someone. And we've talked about that before, personal experience on your side, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
My side as well, because I had a mentally ill parent that I was striving to get help for, and the hoops that I had to go through to actually get him the help that we were able to get him.
Were you able to get him the help?
He went to several sessions with a psychiatrist, telehealth. Like, psychiatrist, he didn't go to them directly. He went to a healthcare facility, went into a room, and the doctor was on a TV screen.
Okay.
That's what happened. But I said that to say, as far as the police are concerned and that whole defunding and Dan said shifting, that you're right. That is what it's about. It's about putting the money where it would be the most help. Because so if you had half of this money going towards mental health and funding domestic violence programs. It is very hard for people to get grants and funding for programs like that, like shelters for abused women and things of that nature. These people pound the pavement and they lose sleep trying to get funding that is right there and could be put to better use. So as far as mental health goes, instead of these people getting help, they get thrown in jail or they die at the hands of police.
Now, another thing to throw in here, too, and this isn't as much as I love knocking New Orleans. This isn't a knock to New Orleans, but it is in a sense. So being down here, one of the things I notice, and we have a friend that talks about this all the time, who's also from like the Midwest, is you'll hear a lot of the times, what school did you go to? Anywhere else, that means what college did you go to? What university did you go to? Down here in New Orleans, it means which high school did you go to? And
but wait, let me stop you. That is not a New Orleans thing, though. That is a Louisiana thing. Louisiana. It's a Southern thing. Louisiana. Really.
So everywhere else I've been, they're referring to college. But being here as long as I have now, I've never seen somewhere that has so many private high schools. Back home, we had three, maybe, and we're talking about a population three or four times the size of New Orleans.
Right.
Here, there's dozens and dozens. And then let's not forget about the charter schools as well.
But it's because prior to Hurricane Katrina, and even after Hurricane Katrina, once again, when Bobby Jindal defunded,
budget cuts. Yeah.
Right. He defunded education.
That's what I'm getting at. Right. Is by cutting the budgets to these schools, we're giving, and we're doing it in the most needy areas.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, Kennedy High School,
mm-hmm.
I went into that high school during my Urbex days where I broke into shit to take pictures, and I'm looking around and I have pictures of the place like weeks before they tore
Nothing
it down.
Nothing was wrong with it.
It was not a complete and total loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, damn. Now, being that I didn't know the area, I don't know the schools very well. Talked to a few people, and I'm like, yeah, Kennedy, da-da-da. And then I'm being told that was a majority black high school.
Correct.
And I'm like, how's this majority black in this area? You wouldn't expect it to be. So
that's why they got it out of there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So tore down, and they cut funding again for all these other schools. So right now we have these lotteries to get into some of these charter schools, and
to private vouchers to get into private schools, right?
And these private schools cost cost
college tuition
$20,000 to $40,000 a year, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, damn, the school system is failing this bad. So that's also another thing that funding can be shifted to. Is the school systems. Now, in my mind, what causes crime here in New Orleans, because believe it or not, I grew up in D.C., but I'm more familiar with New Orleans government than I am with D.C. government, because I was young 20s when I left. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, you know, you grow, you mature and understand things different. Crime, there's many contributors to crime, but one is going to be education.
Lack of education, which
lack
leads
of opportunity.
Lack of education, which leads to lack of opportunity.
Lack of resources.
Which leads to lack of resources.
Exactly. So,
right. It's all a domino. And that is the domino effect. It's like if I am poorly educated, there is one road or there's a couple of roads that I'm going to take. If I am poorly educated, and this is not a knock to anybody who works in fast food.
Who is poorly educated.
No, you need fast food workers.
You do.
All right. But if I am poorly educated, the only thing that I can do, if all I have is a high school diploma, and that's all I have, I'm going to be doing work that's not going to be paying me $20 an hour. You know, not going to be paying me, may not even pay me $10 an hour.
For the most part, yeah.
Right? So then I have to work, and I'm working 40 hours a week.
No, You're working 30 hours a week.
Right. Maybe I'm working part-time. True.
They're not giving your ass no benefits.
Right. Because, well, you know, some places, even part-time workers get benefits. Like Home Depot.
Yeah, Home Depot, Starbucks. And,
right. You know, but, yeah. But like I said, Domino. So I don't have money. Because I don't have money, there are certain things that I'm going to be without. And don't add children into the mix. So now I need to work to take care of my children, but I'm working, and we've discussed this before, I'm working paycheck to paycheck. If anything happens, I'm done because I have no backup. So.
And funny you say that too, talking about the kids, because I talked to quite a few people one in our community and in other communities. Did you know that? Now, of course, this isn't the rule, but I'm about to throw a blanket on it. Is the Black community is probably the only community where you have 16, 17, 18, 19 year old children contributing financially to the household. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to other ethnicities, they think that's crazy. They're like, yo, but you were living there anyway. And why would you charge your kid for the electric bill? Why would you charge it? Because nigga, we broke.
Right. Because I need help. And you know, the crazy thing is.
But that burden is for us as Black children, that burden that fucks us up for the future.
And it does. And what I was going to say is, if I know, you know, I might when I hit high school, I might go out and get a job. Mm-hmm. And so for the 4 years that I'm in high school, if I know that my parent or parents are relying on my income to make it, I am more apt not to go to college, because if I leave, then I leave this hole. You know, I leave this gap, not only financially, but support. And not just financial support, but I might be the one that's taking care of my younger siblings. You know, I might be the one that's making sure that they coming home from school and doing homework, because mom and daddy night shift somewhere doing whatever. So there is a huge burden. Man, you sure good? You fix it?
I'm getting it. I just don't want people to see anal. I am anal.
So, as you said, it is a burden that we carry that a lot of other races don't. Especially, and you know, for the most part, people in the white community, they actually try to make sure they push. They try to make sure that their kids go to college.
Yeah. And
so
I looked at a lot of my white family members, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shout to them. But I saw how they started off their adult lives. And by adult lives, 18 years old, graduated high school. I saw some of the checks that they got from family members just for graduating high school. I saw some of the savings that their families had saved for them to give to them, thousands and thousands of dollars. And to me, it was just mind boggling. I'm like, where the fuck did y'all get that money from just to save it? Because my mama, she ain't have shit to give. My mama gave me, when I got my GED, she gave me $1,500. And that's all the money I had at 18 years old. All right. And, then me and my cousin Marcus, shout out to you, Marcus, because we went to Southeast D.C. and bought a pound of weed with that shit, flipped the fuck out of it. But the other thing that does is that puts us in a position, especially our young Black girls, to be caretakers, right? Mm-hmm. So not only are they caring for their siblings, like we said, they're caring for their household, but to them, it's not abnormal. And to go out at 15, 16, get pregnant, have a child, and care for that child. Mm-hmm. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but
no,
that's going to set you back.
There is actually something wrong with that.
What's wrong with that?
There is something wrong with a 15-year-old having a baby.
Well, I was saying not that there's anything wrong with that, so no one felt bad about it.
There is something.
Tell me, what's wrong with it?
There is something wrong. What's wrong with it is You're right. There are some, but there are some people who can overcome that. And there are some people who have overcome that and gone on, finished high school, college, great jobs, pushing through. But that's people who have support behind them to do that. Right. Most people, or most young girls in the Black community, don't have the support. Because while you are 15 and just had a newborn baby, your mom has three or four other kids that she is caring for, can't take care of you and your baby. Y'all might be living in the house with her, but it's only until you can get your own Section 8, until you can get on government assistance and you can get out and do your own thing.
Right.
Not to say that that's everybody, but that is a very common scenario in our community. So there is something very wrong.
Well, I get that. And there is something wrong, too, with a 15, 16-year-old being a caretaker, period.
Yes.
Because who is taking care of these little girls?
That is correct. While you should still have someone taking care of you, while your only focus should be on studying, passing, getting the education you need to get yourself further, you're worried about whether or not your brother and sister has something to eat when they come home. You're worrying about cleaning the house. Because trust me, I did that. It was make sure that she eats, make sure that my dishes are clean, make sure that, you know, y'all don't mess the house up, this and that and the other. I did that. Yeah. Because for a minute, my mom, even though, you know, as we got older, it was crazy. My mom, when we were younger, was at home. And then as we got older, she went in and she got a job. You know, it wasn't a full-time job. It was a part-time job. But it happened such that I got home. I was the oldest. I had to make sure that everybody else got home, did homework, whatever, whatever, whatever.
And the power went to your head, didn't it?
Man, look, I've been having the power.
Y'all
gonna
listen to me, damn it.
I always had the power. And they did know if I said jump, you better ask how high and you better ask it quickly. Because contrary to power belief, I really am crazy. Or I was back then, let me tell you.
Ain't no was. take it from somebody who is crazy. Man, look. It don't go away.
I was back then. And And this is, you know, we're going down a rabbit hole a little bit, sidebar. It did not take much. Like, I would tell them to do something, and they didn't do it. And I would go get a butcher knife from the butcher block and be like, y'all go do what I say do, or somebody go bleed. And they know that shit was real because I have,
Let's explore that real quick. Let's explore. So where do you think you got that behavior from?
What you mean?
Grabbing a butcher knife because someone is not compliant with...
I don't know. Same way. Same place I got the whole wake up or I'm about to burn you with this iron.
So would you say that came from anger? That sounds like anger to me.
It probably was. So it 100% probably was, because why did I have to be the one driving? Because this was after I started driving too. Mm-hmm. Why I gotta be the one driving people to school, you know? And honestly, that's the things that you think about. You do grow to resent it, because while I'm driving you to school, you should be driving, you know, they should be driving you. You not my kid, but which is why America and beyond, people ask me all the time why I have no kids. The reason why I have no kids, I've been through the whole, let me help somebody grow up. Let me make sure somebody is safe through to maturity.
Man, I did that. I heard this because your uterus broke.
Nah, I did that. And if it is, I'm glad it is. Thank you very much. I've been through the whole, let me change some diapers. Let me get some formula. Let me feed some babies. I mean, I've done that. And I'm inherently a selfish person. And I wasn't doing it no more. So
you resented them. And your acts of, let's say, aggression towards them was your resentment.
Let's not say aggression. It was aggression. It was sociopathic aggression.
Okay, your sociopathic aggression.
It was, because I felt nothing doing that shit.
It was a manifestation of your anger and resentment.
And it 100% probably was.
At what point did this go away? Or do you still carry that resentment as an adult?
I think that I do carry it in some form. I do. And you know, I'm woman enough to admit. Mm-hmm. I do still carry a bit of resentment because I couldn't do what I wanted to do. You know, I had to make sure that they were okay.
Did you have to, or was it a choice?
I did have to, because it was either make sure that they were okay or I was going to get my ass busted. So self-preservation equals do what the parents say to do. Because, you know, unlike your Caucasian brothers and sisters, we don't have time out in the Black community.
Go sit in the
corner. You know, we don't have Jimmy stop. We have get the belt, get the hanger, get the extension cord, get the phone. That's what we have. And
man, the first time you ever hear, I ain't going to tell you again. And you would think that that means they're not going to tell me this again. No, they ain't going to tell you nothing
else. That's correct.
5 years later.
That's correct.
But okay, so was your resentment towards the siblings or towards the parents, and you were acting towards?
So that was it. I resented being made to be a parent. And because I could not manifest this against my parents, you go choose the weakest link, right? So they were the weakest link to me, and I took it out on them. So many a day, like if we called one of my sisters right now and asked her a question about this, she would tell you, like, I did all kinds of shit to these children that I now, you know, look back and go,
child abuse?
Damn, yes. Like,
now, okay, so since you were such a, I'm going somewhere with this line of questioning too. since you were such an integral part of them growing up and being cared for, now as an adult, do you look back? Are you proud of who they've become?
Hell no, because them bitches still on my tit, man. They still, when they need shit, they call me.
And that is a result of you being the caretaker for...
Pretty much. And I mean, I get why, but that shit pisses me off. And, you know, it's not just my siblings. It's younger cousins, too, that I had a hand in babysitting. You know, I'm going to stay babysitting, but I never got paid for that shit. You know, I had to take care of them, too. So
volunteering.
You know, right.
Community service.
Right. So they do it as well. Like, they don't call their mom and dad. They call me and they're like, yada, 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 what you think? And I'm like, you know, I'll say something like, man, that's stupid. Mm-hmm. Or yada, 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 could you help me buy this? Man, don't you have a mom and a daddy? Yeah, but, you know, they go tell me to call you. Like, the very first time I ever heard that, I was like, the fuck? Call me? Why the hell would you call me?
You the one that made it, son. You the one that made it.
Pretty much.
So when you need something or when you needed something, who did you call?
I don't call. And that's the thing. I don't call anybody.
Pride?
Not pride. Cause in my head, so here's the way I operate. If I hit...
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a therapy session now.
If I hit a wall...
Mm-hmm.
I am going to figure out how to climb the wall, go through the wall, or go around the wall.
You can't do that every time.
In my life, I have.
So far.
So far, blessed to be able to do it. So far, I've never had to call on anybody and say I need help. And even if I did, once again, I don't know who I would call, because if all the motherfuckers calling me all the time, who I'm going to turn to?
Well, I can think of a few situations where I know you would turn to.
Like what?
Let's say you need some street shit handled. I'm pretty sure I know a couple of people that you can call for that. So
Maybe.
Now, with that being the case, and that is a very typical upbringing for Black girls, right?
Correct.
Being caretakers. And so with your acting out towards your siblings, I can
and
see
it, others.
I can see it going another way, though. For instance, running away from home. And that's not uncommon either for young Black girls.
True.
15, 16, 17 years old.
And that's how they get caught up, because they get tired.
I know one of them personally last year. Ran away, 17, moved in with like a 30-plus-year-old dude. And in her mind, she's using him for his money and a place to stay.
So she can get away from that shit.
In his mind, he's grooming her by giving her money and a place to stay. So it's not mutually beneficial, but at the same time, each person thinks that they're benefiting off of this. So it becomes a battle of the wills, or who's going to win this battle. And just the fact that you're 16, 17 year old living and trying to manipulate somebody who's twice your age, who's seen a lot more than you have.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably going to be on the losing end of that. But at the same time, that's how a lot of our young Black girls go missing. How they end up trafficked and prostitution and things like that. So our upbringings are very, very different. And it all goes back to what
resources.
Where the funding is going.
Right. It's so, resources. But you know what? One thing I can say, it never crossed my mind
to be a prostitute.
To leave. It never crossed my mind to get out. I promise you, it was never, and the reason why is because I have been, I'm going to say, indoctrinated and brainwashed into believing that this is what I had to do. It was my duty towards the family. So it was never a situation where I was like, man, F this shit, I'm out.
Well, let me ask you this too. Before you lost your grandmother, how pivotal of a role did she play in your life? And to be more specific, when I'm down and out and I ain't got shit left and I got nobody I could turn to for anything, because unlike you, mine is pride. I don't reach out of pride. And again, I can admit it. I'm too prideful to ask for help. And oftentimes I'm too prideful to accept help that's being offered without me asking. But when I find myself in that place where it's like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, you don't know how to handle this. And especially when I was younger, say late teens, early 20s, I remember there would be a point where it's like, grandma got the answer to this shit, no matter what. So I'll pick up the phone, call my grandma, and she would hit me with some old Black grandma, Southern country wisdom shit. And you just like, God damn it, she made this shit so fucking simple. And here I am beating my head up against the wall. And the reason I bring up grandma is the grandparents these days, and it's not a knock towards them, but they're not like the grandparents that we grew up having.
And you know why that is?
Because they wasn't slaves. My grandma was a slave.
No, well, you think about it, it's because the average age of a grandmother these days,
like 40.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially in the Black community.
Yeah.
So literally these children are being raised by grandparents who are still partying.
Yeah.
Think about it.
At the club.
Right. Yeah. Think about it. You might be in the club with your daughter, somebody, exactly. and the older siblings watching the younger ones. That is a reality. Not that it's everybody, but that is a reality. And as far as grandmothers, I lost one of my grandparents, my grandmother, because on my paternal grandfather, I never knew. So I only knew my paternal grandmother. I lost her in 1990. So it wasn't a situation where I actually had to call up and say, Mom, tell me X, Y, and Z. Never had that situation. So fast forward, my maternal grandmother, it was never a situation where I had to call on her and ask for help, because even she, like, I took care of her for the better part of 10 years. So, you know, Hurricane Katrina happened. My grandfather passed away. And my grandmother, she didn't know anything about really business at all. My grandmother had, quite like you, she had a sixth grade education. She dropped, and think about the fact that my grandmother was born in 1928. Mm-hmm. So a sixth grade education for a black person
today, or probably a third grade education,
if that.
Yeah.
And she had to drop out of school, since we're talking about this,
raise a family
to help her parents, mm-hmm, raise her brothers and sisters. She was the oldest,
right?
So she dropped out of school to help raise the kids and help work the farm. So that was, and I think that's for the most part where I got a lot of that from, because as I was growing up, I knew about what she had done. So Hurricane Katrina happens, my grandfather passes away, and he was the one who handled everything in the house. Like, my grandmother didn't really have access to bank accounts. You know, she didn't pay bills. She didn't do any of that. My grandfather did it all. So when my grandfather passed away, my aunties started helping her out. And then when we moved in after Katrina, I did it, mm-hmm, you know? So it was like, as far as my grandmother was concerned, that wasn't really, I never turned to her for like, help me out of this life conflict, because in my head, it was always, you know, this woman has been through, you know, dropping out of school, getting married, having 11 kids, raising all of them, all these grandkids coming in and out of her life. It's like, didn't want to be one more burden.
Shit, that's the person I would want to burden just because of the life experience.
But that's me, though. I don't like to subject other people to my problems. I'm the person who will smile through it all. Nobody will never know that shit is going on with me until I tell them, you know, X, Y, and Z happened. And then they'll be like, is there anything I can do? Oh, no, it's over with. You know, it's done.
Man, I'm the complete opposite. Everybody know, because as soon as it happens, I'm like, hey, this shit, man, let me tell y'all what the fuck.
So,
to tie that in to funding is right there, you heard two completely different people, two completely different families with similar experiences. And what it revolves around is resources.
Resources.
We are our own resources.
That's right.
But we don't have the finances, and our parents' generation, our grandparents, they didn't have the education, mm-hmm, nor did they even have civil rights.
Correct.
So it's like us being our own resources, but not having shit, it is fucking hard.
Right.
So if you take some of these dollars from these police departments, these police that come into our communities, abuse us, mm-hmm, murder us, mm-hmm, target us, profile,
mm-hmm,
us,
mm-hmm,
and you know, they want to talk about body cams. Body cams haven't done shit other
Not a
than
damn
show
thing.
The world more black people being killed.
Right. And then they mysteriously drop off when when we really need to see what you are doing, that's when they drop off.
Now, just today I saw a post at Columbus peaceful protest. There was a guy in a wheelchair. He had he was in double amputee, no legs. Police maced him, pushed him out of his wheelchair, and then snatched his legs off. And he had to crawl to find help. So and there's video of this shit. And then there's video of the cop, pictures of the cop. So it's like the sensitivity training, that's not working. Just
yeah,
like
the diversity training.
How Starbucks closed all their offices for one day, or stores for one day. So
yeah, diversity training doesn't work. That because it's a culture thing.
Yeah,
and you know, I had a conversation with someone, with this white guy who is trying to understand.
Oh, is he the one that said, "What the hell is Juneteenth?"
No. No, that mother, he don't want to understand, but who is trying to understand. And something that he said to me, it was like, I said, he was like, what can we do right now? And I said, let me tell you something. You cannot change 400 plus years of a system that is stacked against you
with a simple gesture overnight.
In a matter of months or years. I'm talking about 400 plus years of systematic, inherent racism. You can't wipe that away unless you wipe the whole system. You reboot the whole system and start from scratch.
And what happens when once you even threaten to make some progress, mm-hmm. white people lose their shit. Like, how dare you tell me to wear a mask? Nigga, we out here getting killed and you telling us we should comply. And then the CDC says wear a mask and mm-hmm. you can't tell me what to do. Motherfucker, right. Comply. Shit.
Yeah, but the problem is, see, and I told the same person, I said, let me tell you what one of the very root foundations of this is. White people think that a black person having something makes them less. And that is inherent. I don't know where the hell it came from, but
when you say a black person having something, meaning
anything, like if you have more education, okay. I mean, case in point, Black Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
you know, how, and I read something and it said, you know, they had some of these white people saying, how do they have a grand piano in their houses? I don't have one in mine. You know, how do they have this big house? I don't have that. So fast forward, it is still that something. If we gain anything, that equals at least in their heads,
inequality on their part.
You know, that equals they are less than. You know, we talked about affirmative action and how we felt about affirmative action. You know, white people decry affirmative action. It's like,
why don't you just hire the person that's most qualified? Because
you won't.
Y'all gonna throw Jamal's resume in the trash.
Right. Even though Jamal might be the better qualified, you will not hire Jamal because you know that Jamal is a black person. I mean, we've discussed that and we've talked about studies who have shown, here it is, people, exact same resume. One has Susan and one has LaQuisha.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Susan get a call back. LaQuisha ain't getting nothing.
No, LaQuisha gonna get a call back. But it's only, and I've seen this because I know somebody that works with hiring people. They'll get a call back, but they already know off top that I don't care how qualified she is. What's gonna happen is we're gonna call you in and interview you. And all it is just to make the stats look good. You know, we interviewed these applicants and, you know, we interviewed black people. But you're going to hear one of two things. Either you're overqualified, which is a slap in the face. Mm-hmm. If I'm overqualified, then what the fuck is the problem hiring me?
Hire me. Right.
Oh, because we think you're going to leave or that, you know, or you're underqualified. And then it's like, peace out. And then the next person that's overqualified comes in, a white person, they get hired on the spot or underqualified.
Right. But, you know, somebody said, I heard somebody say something about those particular situations, how, you know, you see the inequities. And the reason why you see them is because where most deals are made are on golf courses.
Yeah.
And you think about hiring, you know, you might be on a golf course with me and you say, yeah, I have this position we're looking to fill. And I don't know anybody qualified. Do you? First person that you're going to think about is somebody, you know, who looks like you. Right. So you're going to put that person up. How many black people you see on the golf course? How many black people you see at the tennis course? How many black people you actually see at the pool?
I can name them all. I seen Tiger.
Tiger.
I seen Serena. Uh-huh. So, yeah, but That's basically, in a nutshell, going back to the defunding.
Resources.
I do think that it needs to be rebranded, renamed. Let's call it shifting funds rather than defunding, because that's throwing a whole lot of people off. And a lot of people have expressed that same sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all for it when you have even L.A. They're talking about now cutting their police budget $150 million a year. Like, why do you need more than $150 a year? You're investing in body armor. You're investing in military style training and weapons. You're investing in these cameras. You're investing in a lot of shit, but you're not investing in your community, in the communities that these officers have to go patrol and protect and serve.
Correct. And somebody, I was listening to an interview, and the person being interviewed said, we get more policed and we get more police. And I said, true, because they put more cops in black neighborhoods because, of course, black people commit more crimes. So it's like.
And the same could be said for jails. We get more jails because we get more jailed.
Yeah. Correct.
So anyway, let's shift the funding and let's invest in what we really need to invest in. And for the white people that do want to know how they can help, invest in our community. The black crazy stat, and then we're gonna wrap this up here and move to
qualified immunity.
I was watching it was a TED talk actually by prominent black, I believe she's an attorney. She worked under John Lewis in Atlanta.
Okay.
She worked under Barack Obama in Illinois.
Okay.
So she became like a news anchor, and she would go through the inner cities of Chicago, and black people hated her for this shit. And she's black, and they hated her. They're like, you're making us look bad on TV. And she's like, no, I'm showing the world.
I'm trying to show the world what reality is.
So she went into businesses, and she, hey, I'm such and such with such and such, and we're looking to talk to black business owners. None in inner city Chicago, none of the business owners were black.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I bring that up because there's a study that she was talking about where the Asian dollar stays in the Asian community for 28 days,
mm-hmm.
meaning it does. If I go spend a dollar, it's going to be with another Asian.
Correct.
They're going to spend that dollar with another
the
white dollar. 19 days.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing. The Hispanic dollar was like 13 days, I want to say. The black dollar, take a guess.
Probably not even a day, because we go straight from getting the money and going to somewhere else with it because we have nothing in our community.
6 hours. That's how long the black dollar stays in the black community.
I believe it.
And to also close, we did have an adventure with a black company doing our pool shit. And it was a fucking adventure, but notice online, I didn't say anything bad about this brother,
man.
And I could have, but he got the job done. And just the funniest thing to top it off, I don't think I told you this. So we outside yesterday doing work in the yard, and Becky gets a phone call. It's a weird number. It's like, hello? Hi, this is so-and-so with Speedy Check. Like, I think you have the wrong number. Are you Becky?
Oh, they're trying to see if the check was going to
verify
clear.
Check. And like, I hear her talking, and I'm like, this sounds really familiar. Like, so basically, dude took it to a check cashing spot and paid the
10%.
I'm like, damn, Brian had no bank account.
Stupid.
And if he would have told us that, we
could have
gave
the
nigga cash. Yeah,
yeah,
because at this point, like at the point where we're paying him, we're satisfied with
the
work.
Sure.
So it's like, nigga, we would have gave you cash had you said you were going to a check cashing spot.
Man, but it was that professional appearance that he wanted to relate.
What
to
professional?
No, but you know what? You said about black businesses, but if you recall, we did a segment and we talked about black businesses being funded. And, you know, banks rarely fund black businesses. I mean, I believe I relayed, if you remember, about the, it's like, it's not an Instacart, but it's like a, sort of like an Instacart. It's an app that these two, I believe they're from Nigeria, two Nigerian friends came up with to actually serve the immigrant community. It's like a Uber Eats, but it's geared towards, geared towards products that they would have in their native lands. And this is not just, you know, not just African people, but right,
anybody.
Right. But foods that they would have and products that they would have in their native land that they are hard to find in America. So they went to the bank to try to get capital for it. And the bank basically told them, hell no, because the gist of it was black businesses never prosper. You know, black businesses fail. And this other lady, they told her, you know, and she was like Harvard educated, had her business plan, did it, everything, went to the people. They looked at it, said this was awesome. And yeah, we loan you the money. But what we suggest that you do is make a Caucasian person the face of your company, because you're not going to get anywhere with your face.
So they're basically redlining the banking industry.
Right. So, I mean, we joke about black businesses and black people and how, you know,
never joke about my people.
How ratchet they are in X, Y, and Z. But it's, once again, goes back to resources. Yeah. You know, if you had the ability to go to these incubators and someone would actually show you how to do, you know, draw up a business plan and a budget and talk about funding with you, nobody does that. Because I go forward and I said, I want to do this. And it's like, it takes an act of Congress.
And even if you do have somebody to show you the ropes and show you how to do everything, still the odds are not in your favor. But I ain't even going to lie. That fucked me up when dude called from the check cashing spot, because the check we wrote him, he would have paid, let's just say on average,
probably 30%, maybe 15%.
I'm guessing 10%.
It's more than 10%, dude.
So out of what we paid him, he probably paid just a couple of hundred, if not more, dollars to cash this check.
It was definitely hundreds.
And I'm like, all the work these niggas did, you basically giving away a day's worth of work or so. Correct. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up this episode. And I'm going to go change my hat. And then we're going to talk about...
wait, you're going to change your hat?
Yeah, I'm going to change my hat so they think it's a new week and a new episode.
Qualified immunity,
Qualified immunity. My name is Dan. Keep up with me on Twitter and IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Keep up with the show across all platforms at Black Law Pizzodcast.
Oh, damn. And I'm just
saying... A little sizzle on that.
And you can follow me on Twitter at ITellLegalize. And don't put no zizzle on dizzle.
But shizzle.
My nizzle.
Peace.